Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I have no idea where he is. He's on business doing something. And, you know, when the Lauren Stewart, by the way, is my... I'm about to start talking to Lauren and haven't even introduced her. Good morning, Lauren.
It's good to be here.
You know, when Tim says, hey, take the show tomorrow, I won't be here, I just say, yes, sir. And, you know, you don't ask the boss, well, where are you going to be? What are you doing? You know,
I might ask him.
You might ask him. So what are you going to be doing?
Where are you going? Yeah.
So anyway, so we have a great show today. We have James McCafferty. Most of our listeners, some of our listeners may know him personally. He's a longtime supporter of AFR listener, and he's written a book about bear hunting that is so exciting. And
it's like a Christian Revenant. Is that what was that movie was called with Leonardo
Revenant?
DiCaprio? Revenant?
Yeah, I never saw that. Did you see that?
No, I heard it was really hard to watch.
Well, I think it was R-rated, pretty brutal.
And this day and age, if it's R, run.
Yes.
It's bad.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So I know I have not seen that. But this is going to be exciting because we're going to talk kind of guy.
Talk bear.
We're going to talk men's men, you know.
And I would be here today.
Yes. Because you were telling me you won't even kill wasps that, it, you know, like when the fall starts to come. And, you know,
they
start to slow down. You actually give them sugar water to kind of, you know, get their strength back up.
Yeah, my husband thinks I'm nuts.
Well.
And sometimes it works, sometimes
Robin,
it doesn't.
If you're
I'm
listening,
like,
I'm on your side.
Yeah. I was just born this way. My dad is worse. Like, he feeds everything. Like, his house might as well just be in the great outdoors.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm kind of like that, but I do have my limits. But your wife is very similar.
Oh, no,
so
she's a rescuer.
It's going on in your house, too.
Hey, listen, she has pulled over in the middle of usually country roads, thankfully, to get a turtle that is crossing the road off. I say, please do not do that. I don't want you getting killed by a car because you're trying to save a turtle. But she said, I can't help it. She's made me turn around.
And go get. See, recently there was a little turtle in a really busy area. We were traveling. Maybe it was Atlanta. And I said, Robin, we got to go back. But there was so much traffic. He's like, honey, there's no... I mean, we can't stop the traffic to get the turtle. But you don't feel a little bit bad when they're out there with a little head poked out in the middle of the street?
But like I tell my wife, things die. I mean, that is just...
They're going to a greater place, like us.
I'm not sure about turtles, but...
Ed,
pretty
turtles
sure about
are going to be there.
I'm pretty sure about dogs. Dogs all go, dogs
all go to heaven.
All right, so we're going to have James McCafferty on. Bottom of the hour, R.R. Reno, who's editor of First Things magazine, great magazine. He's author of a book. We're going to talk to him about resurrecting the idea of a Christian society. Looking forward to that. Next hour, John Lott, who is a staunch defender of the Second Amendment, does all kinds of research about the importance of defending ourselves, and he's author of the book, The War on Guns, Arming Yourself Against Gun Control Lies. So this is a pretty manly show. And Lauren, you know, you're going to be right here in the thick
of it. I'll have the woman's perspective.
The woman's perspective.
And I'm pretty girly.
On manliness.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is good to have that balance.
It is.
Because just say Tim was here today, the women would be out there listening going, we need a woman's voice.
Yes.
So it's meant to be that I was here.
We're going to have need a woman's voice on bear killing. Not that I could ever do that, but so I'm going to listen to James McCafferty tell us how the guy he writes a story. This is a true story. It's a sort of a biography of Robert Eager Bobo, one of the most famous bear hunters of the 1800s. And so really fascinating stuff. So we'll have him on for a while. I want to get your take. We just have a few minutes before James is coming on. Your take about on the election. The first thing I want to mention is, I don't know if our listeners have ever heard of Mark Dice. I'm not sure what Mark describes himself as, but he does a lot of these man on the street interviews. Mm-hmm. And he must live either in Florida or California because these are all done on the beach, it seems like, or near the beach. He actually has video posted. I saw it on Drudge Report this morning, interviewing young people. It's always young people. I feel sorry for them because most of them have not been taught a lot of history. Interviewing these young people about the upcoming presidential race, asking them, well, listen, what do you think about Karl Marx? Karl Marx, for those listening, is the author of The Communist Manifesto, is mm-hmm. one of the probably the most famous leader of the communist theoretician of the ideology of communism. His book, The Communist Manifesto, I think was published in the 1880 mm-hmm. something.
But he's been dead a long time.
He's been dead a long time.
Long time.
And Marxists and Marxism, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. These young people should know what this is all about. But Mark Dice is asking them, what do you think about Karl Marx? He's running as an independent. He's a well-known economist. And what do you think about that? And all these young people are going, yeah, sure. I mean, if he's an economist and, better Karl Marx.
Post-something unanimous vote. When you vote for somebody after they're dead to win the prize.
Oh, posthumous?
A posthumous? Yeah. Yeah. But they don't even know that much.
No. So I was watching this, and when I watch and I see these kinds of things, I think, man, we are toast. If this is the next generation, they don't even know who Karl Marx is.
Well, how many of that he asked that to went along with it? Were there any that said, what, he's dead and been dead
for a long
time?
It's pretty long. I watched, half of it or whatever, and they're all saying, yeah, man, Karl Marx, he's I could go for him, and he's pretty smart guy. And that's another thing that bothers me about these is so many of these people just lie.
Mm-hmm.
They lie. I remember, I don't know if it was Waters World or Jay Leno. Jay Leno used to do a lot
Mount
of these.
Street. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was one of these guys, Jimmy Kimmel or mm-hmm. somebody. But they asked about an awards show. I want to say it was the Oscars or something. And he starts, and that way it was going to be that weekend upcoming.
Mm-hmm.
But he would ask him, did you watch the Oscars last night? All these people lying. Oh, yeah. Well, what do you think about so-and-so winning? Not even in the running. And they're just fabricating these lies. Now, these are people.
They're like, I'm on television.
Yeah. The lying was, I guess, what might have bothered me more than anything, but.
Well, and that's why we encourage you here to study, to show yourself approved, know why you believe what you believe. And we have a voter's guide
right,
out there
good.
For you all the time that if you're like, I'm busy, I'm working, I got kids, or just you're like, I'm not into politics. I talk to people that are like, I just can't engage. It stresses me out. We
right.
understand that, but at least go over the voter's guide and see why these people would be great for the office or why they would not, what their beliefs are about a myriad of different things about gay marriage or abortion or, about protecting our borders or how they would handle dealing with ISIS, all these things, that's essential. And, this generation is different. Not that we knew so much when I was like 18 or
right.
19, but I remember being really aware of the presidential candidates and what they believed. Didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I can remember.
Even as a teen, an upper teen.
I can remember in junior high school, we would wear buttons for our, the candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to get in arguments all the time, even in junior high school, about the Vietnam War and those kind of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times people just, and maybe it's a product of the education system, I'm not sure. But a good call there mentioning the voter's guide. You can go to afaaction.net. And we have a free voter's guide. You can download it or you can just look at it online or on your tablet. And it not only covers the presidential race, but all the major congressional races,
mm-hmm.
some of the state races, some of the gubernatorial races. And we went through a lot. It's probably the most complete voter's guide out there.
Well, there's no reason that you should go to lay down what you want on your ballot, to mark a box and go, not real sure, but I'm going to mark it anyway.
Right.
We want to know when you go in there that you know exactly who you're voting for and why you are. And you should be able to with Voter's Guide. Like I said,
right.
even if it's just going on in your part of the country or your state, it'll lay it out there for you.
Yeah. So folks, try to get, you have 2.5 months to get up to speed on what some of these candidates believe. Voting is so important. It is part of our civic responsibility. It is a little stressful because It is on 24/7, and a lot of it is, you know, argumentative. We understand that. Turn the TV off some if you want to take a break, but get to the AFA Voters Guide at AFAaction.net and educate yourself and make sure in most states you are still able to register to vote, even at this late stage. Most states are, if you're 30 days out from the election, you can still register. So,
or do absentee if you're going to be gone.
Right.
A lot of people do absentee ballots.
I did it one time. I was going to be out of town on election day, so I just went down to the city office.
And it's fairly easy.
And it's fairly just sign a little affidavit saying you can be out of the town, and then you're given an absentee ballot and you mail it in. So
2.5 months.
2.5 months.
I'm breaking out in a sweat. You just saying that.
All right, well, we're going to move along. We have some great guests coming this program, and the first is up and ready, James McCafferty, who's a lawyer and a writer. He is an AFR listener and has been an AFA supporter for many, many years. I count him as a friend. He's also the author of The Bear Hunter, The Life and Times of Robert Eager Bobo in the Cane Breaks of the Old South. What a great title.
He looks James, a little like Ernest Hemingway.
Who, James does?
Yeah. He's
he
got
does
a little
with
of
that.
Hat. What is it called? Not Hemanisk, but you know when it he's kind of looks Ernest Hemingway-ish.
Well, James, what do you think about that? Jim?
I'm not sure what to make of that.
That's a compliment. He was tough. You know,
Ernest Hemingway?
He was a tough dude. Yeah, I think he wrestled bears and stuff.
Well,
take it as a compliment.
Well, Jim, this is a great book. Even my wife liked this book. Now, this is an unusual choice for TI because it's not dealing with politics or culture per se. But this book is rich with history, and it is fascinating. And plus, it is a glimpse of manhood, I think, that sometimes is missing in our metrosexual world. I want to read just one line from this book to kind of give folks a flavor of the kind of men we're talking about. You mentioned the adventures of real-life Delta characters and bear hunters like Yazoo County's panther fighter and preacher Mike Hooter and Issaquena County's Calvin Belcher, who once tried to ride an alligator across the Yazoo River. Jim, these were men's men. This book is just fascinating from cover to cover.
They were characters, no doubt about it.
Those were real people, a pastor that wrestled panthers?
Well, Mike Hooter was an interesting character in Yazoo County. He became sort of his life was sort of fictionalized by a writer back in the 1840s. And there are a lot of stories that were published about him in the national press, particularly a magazine called The Spirit of the Times back then. And some of it's true, some of it's not. But he definitely was. You had to be a pretty tough character to live in Yazoo County in the 1840s.
And apparently you had to be a pretty tough guy to be a preacher in Yazoo County.
He was a Methodist preacher. He sure was.
Jim, I got to tell you what happened to me a couple weeks ago. So my husband and I are in China adopting our little boy Knox, and his gotcha date was July 4th. So that tells you what, a month and a half ago. And Nanjing was the first city we went to, and the Chinese food they eat is not like what we eat over here. You know, we like Cantonese, and you know, give me some sweet and sour sauce. Right. It's different there. And so all I had eaten for days was rice and ramen noodles. And I was like, oh my goodness, we got to have some more food. So we kind of glimpsed in our hotel restaurant for their buffet, and it looked pretty good, and we're like, well, we'll eat the buffet tonight, you know, there's got to be something on there that we like, because it was station after station after station. And so we get in there and we start going around, and my gills are getting greener and greener and greener, and my husband, he likes to eat weird freaky stuff, but he was green. Okay. Do you know what one of the delicacies that they had on the buffet bar?
Dog.
I'm afraid to ask.
Yeah. Black bear with honey.
Really?
Okay, then, so you know what we end up eating? Well, I know I did, and our child, onion rings and chicken nuggets off the kitty bar. That was all
you
I ate.
You wouldn't even try the
bear?
No.
Okay, then we get our bill, because we just said, put it on the room. When we checked out, $125 for Robin and me and our little six-year-old to eat French fries and chicken nuggets and onion rings.
Well, you missed out by not trying the bear. It tastes like barbecued pork.
Now, what?
You've tried bear before?
Jim.
I have eaten bear. I have.
Well, I got to ask you, what this now? This book is a rollicking adventure. I mean, I'm just going to tell you why write about Robert Bobo, Bob Bobo. Why was he so important in your mind?
Well, a number of reasons. My father was a Methodist preacher, and I grew up in the Delta. My father served churches in Marks, Clarksdale,
okay,
when I was growing up, and back in the 60s, when I was a child, there were still many people around who remembered the days of the bear and the panther and could remember when Theodore Roosevelt hunted in the Delta, for instance. And I'd heard the stories about the old bear hunters, and I heard the stories about the great cane breaks and the great swamps and woodlands that were gone by that time. And I just felt like these people needed to be remembered, this environment needed to be remembered. And folk like I am, who didn't know what a cane break was, but had heard about them, it would be interesting to us to know what they were. So I want to write this book to tell people about the old bear hunting culture, to tell people about the old Delta wilderness environment that lasted up until the 1890s, actually, and to set down in our collective memory the stories of some of these great individuals, like the one you mentioned, Calvin Belcher, who tried to ride the alligator across the Yazoo River. And another one I can think of up in Arkansas who, in the 1880 census, I believe it was, put his occupation down as a bear hunter and a curiosity. There were a lot of characters back then, and they just need to be remembered.
Jim, what is a cane break?
Well, a cane break, cane is basically a type of bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen the ornamental bamboo growing in people's yards, you know, once you plant that stuff, it takes over and you can't get rid of it. But you see patches of it, I know here in the South we do. The cane was similar to that, only it doesn't grow as easily. It took a long time for it to get started, and it was easier to kill than that bamboo. But the cane would grow in almost impenetrable thickets, sometimes miles long and miles wide. There's one particular one that Bob Bobo hunted around that was about 6 miles wide and 20 miles long. And it was so thick, the cane was the size of big around 2 or 3 inches from the center, and it would be growing almost each plant would be next to another one. So you can imagine how difficult it was to get through there, but the game could hide in there, and so the hunters found those areas great places to hunt.
I think some people probably got switch-ins with cane breaks too, didn't they?
Probably so. the cane breaks disappeared because, you know, the Delta was prone to flooding.
Mm.
Why? It was the 1890s before they really started to clear the Delta and settle it, 1880s and 1890s. And the reason the cane breaks are gone is because it was the first land cleared because the cane did not tolerate flooding very well. So the cane grew on the higher ground. So if a farmer wanted some good farmland, he would look for a cane break, clear that and plant it, and he would be unlikely to be affected by floods.
Well,
that's
and you
interesting.
Said, yeah, you said in the book that that it was so thick that some, at least in one occasion, you're talking about a rider on horseback chasing a bear, or he's going in there. I don't remember if he was hunting deer or whatever. And they would actually get stuck, and then the rider would have to get down and use his knife. I guess they have these 18-inch
exactly.
knives to hack their way out.
More like a machete.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it was a knife. That's what I kept thinking was a machete, but you took great pains to describe the fact that these were like 18-inch blades or something, but they were double-edged?
Well, they were different types because most of them were homemade, as near as I can tell. And, you know, a machete usually has something of a blunt end, not really pointed like a hunting knife or a dagger or something like that. But as near as I can tell, these canines generally had a pretty good point on it because they used them to kill bears with sometimes. That was one of the significant aspects of the way these bears were hunted was that frequently a knife was used to kill the bear. For this reason, the bear hunters, most of them used large packs of dogs. to find the bear. And then when the bear was cornered, they would follow the bear on the dogs on horseback. Then when the bear was cornered, the hunter would move in to kill the bear. But oftentimes the dogs were in so close that the hunter did not want to shoot because he was afraid he might kill one of his dogs. And he didn't want to kill one of his well-trained bear dogs. So he would move in closely and actually kill the bear with a knife.
Wow. But the book is more than just about bear hunting, because I know there's people listening that are like me going, oh, the poor bear, you know, and so there's more to it. I mean, there's more to it. So I wanted to ask you that, and also I want to ask you about Bobo, but address that first. That, I mean, this is about history.
There's a lot more to the book than about bear hunting. In fact, I was at a bookstore not long ago, and the proprietor of the bookstore was telling someone that the book is about bear hunting, and it's tactful as I could, I suggested that it was not really just about bear hunting. In fact, it was a lot more about that. It's about the Delta culture of the 1880s and 90s. I know you probably have a lot of listeners who don't know what I'm talking about when I say the Delta. If I can stop for a second and explain the Delta. The Delta is a part of Mississippi that basically lies between just south of Memphis, Tennessee, stretching almost 200 miles down to Vicksburg, Mississippi. And this is along the western side of the state of Mississippi, bordered by the Mississippi River. And the Delta is basically a huge river bottom, as I said, about 200 miles long from north to south and up to 120 miles wide in places from east to west. Along the eastern side, there's kind of an arc of low hills abruptly rising. They seem much larger than they are because they rise so quickly from the Delta. But in that land we call the Delta, it's essentially flat. And in those days, it was covered with timber, canebrakes, swamps, lakes, many lakes. Today, it's largely an agricultural region.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, for your listeners who aren't familiar with Mississippi and aren't familiar with the term Delta, as we use it in Mississippi, that's what the Mississippi Delta is. And that, and there's a similar area of Arkansas and Louisiana they call the Delta, too.
Hey, Jim, we've got about a minute left.
Yeah. Okay.
You want to ask me about Bobo?
Yeah, just real briefly, why Robert Bobo was considered the most famous bear hunter of the late 1800s.
Bobo was a pioneer in Mississippi. He hunted bear all the time, and he was written about, probably the most famous bear hunter of that time period. Some 9 major outdoor articles were written about him in major magazines in those days. And if I could, there's a lot more about Bobo and these bear hunters on my website, canebrakes.com, C-A-N-E-B-R-A-K-E-S, canebrakes.com. You can find out a lot more about the book and about these bear hunters and about the old Delta environment by going to that website. I've got a lot of interesting stuff on there.
Well, the book and our guest has been by James McCafferty. That's McCafferty. This book is about Bob Bobo, but it is also filled with bears and wolves and panthers and the culture. Jesse James shows up in this book. This is it's an amazing story. Theodore Roosevelt. This has got so much history. It's just a fun read. It's called The Bear Hunter. The Bear Hunter. James McCafferty is the author and has been our guest. Hey, Jim, thanks so much for being on with us. Appreciate it. Great piece of work here.
Thank you, Lauren and Ed. I appreciate you.
You know, my husband's business is in Marks, and he took me to the Delta when we started dating, and I was like, I thought the Delta was Jackson, Mississippi. He's like, girl! So he is in Marks, Mississippi every single day, so I wonder if he knows Jim.
He'll
love to read that.
Well, Jim is a lawyer. I'll let you borrow the book if you promise to return it.
Okay, y'all heard it. I can only borrow it. I can't have it.
You can't have it. No, I've got
a witness.
Jim wrote something to me personally. Yeah, so... look, folks, we're going to be back talking about resurrecting the idea of a Christian society. Back in 3.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Alex McFarland on question number 21 of his book, The 21 Toughest Questions Your Kids May Ask About Christianity.
There's people that want to radically change who God had originally made them to be.
And we'll talk with Mike Bechtel, author of I Wish He Had Come With Instructions, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. That's on the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR, and online at AFR.net.
Since I've led tours for many years to the Holy Land, Israel, many people ask me, what's your favorite place to go? I have two, really. The Garden Tomb and Calvary, and the Sea of Galilee. Now, I like all the places we stop along the way in Israel, but those two places in particular are very special and meaningful. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll be going to all the places you've read about in the Bible since you were a child. It's going to be a very special tour of Israel, the Holy Land, March 9 through 17, 2017. We're taking a direct flight from New York to Tel Aviv. For all the information on this tour, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, option 5, and leave us your name and your address, and we'll send you a brochure. 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with this Fox News and commentary next. Big trouble in Tampa, Florida. A grade school principal was caught doing something inappropriate. The Hillsborough School District says they captured the entire incident on camera. And apparently other staff members at Riverview Elementary School were engaged in the same kind of untoward activity. The principal received a warning letter and was told to control future urges he might have. So what, you might ask, what sort of rule did Principal Anthony Montoto violate? Well, it turns out he prayed with the faculty before school started. Heaven forbid that happens again. Elvis Week wrapping up in Memphis. Thousands turned out for last night's candlelight vigil. As expected, Black Lives Matter showed up. There were some arrests, but the vigil went on as planned. Protesters should be counting their blessings that nobody got a blue suede boot up their behind. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I'm joined in studio by co-host Lauren Stewart. Lauren, you mentioned...
You say my name, like, ominously.
Ominously,
Lauren Stewart. At least you didn't call me Seward.
What I called you. Yeah, I called you Seward for a while.
Well, you were used to my maiden name, which is Kitchens, which everybody knows that. That's everybody's favorite room in the house.
Yeah, Kitchens.
Seward was a little bit different for you to have to adjust to.
And you were so nice, you didn't even correct me, because I, for like two or three shows, Lauren Seward.
I think I just started doing the show, so I was a little bit nervous. Now I'm like, it's Stewart, Ed.
It's Stewart, moron.
Yeah.
Listen, you mentioned going to China. I don't know how many of our Today's Issues listeners know that you and your husband, Robin, have adopted two kids from China, or
one child from China.
Okay.
Last month. And then we have a little girl that's 7 that we adopted from Nepal when she was a year and a half.
Okay.
And they are just hilarious together. He loves his sister when he sees her. He runs like the wind, jumps in her arms, and wraps his legs around her. I mean, he's like 40 pounds, and he's 6, and she's like 70
pounds.
And
he runs like the wind?
He's quick. He's a quick little dude. But he's funny, and he's smart. He was born deaf, and he doesn't like wearing his cochlear. And he's going to the Memphis Oral School for the Deaf. And these kids are amazing. Like, they don't have an impediment at all. Because
now,
the cochlear helps them to hear.
It does help them to hear. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think it's a little robotic. I don't know that it's how we hear. But it takes them to a level of hearing sound-wise like we do.
Right.
But all we can figure is that in China, they fitted him for cochlear, which surprised us because it's so expensive. But they did.
Right.
And that they must have put it on him at 3. So he's had 3 years of total silence and bliss.
Wow.
And all of a sudden,
yeah.
And so if you're like, turn it on, Robin's like, you can have a little car. You can do this. You can have a milkshake. If you turn on your cochlear, he's like, mm-mm. So we're trying to get to the bottom of what's going on with that and get that working and functioning.
Yeah.
He'll wear it. He just didn't like to turn it on. But he's in a great school. And I mean, it's funny because we're all talking to him like, you're too loud, because he's loud because he can't hear himself. So we're talking loud. You're too loud. You know, I'm like, honey, he can't hear you. He's like, I know. And we've learned to have, you know, we don't do American Sign Language because he doesn't know American Sign Language
right.
yet. And but you find your way of communicating. Like, we all communicate like we're speaking.
I could communicate with my kids when they were growing up with just a look.
Just a look.
Yes.
That's all it took.
They saw the look. And my daughter, one time she was upset. And our listeners don't want to hear this, but if they're in their car, they have no choice. But she was in trouble. And I came home, and my wife said, you need to talk to your daughter. She was, I don't know, 4 years old or five or something. I can't remember the ages.
I remember
ages.
Lindsay at four.
Oh, yeah.
So beautiful.
So she locked herself in the bathroom because Daddy was home. You know, I didn't beat the kids, but she knew she was in trouble. So I went to the door. I said, sweetie, open up now. Daddy has to talk to you. Your mama said you're in trouble. She said, I don't want to see you. And I said, well, why? She said, because I'll see your mad thing. And I said, my mad thing? And she was talking about the line in between my eyebrows.
Oh, your furrowed brow.
When I would get upset. So that was the mad thing. So I said, what's the mad thing? She said, that line right there between your eyebrows when you get mad. So I started busting out laughing. So
while you have the Q-tip saying, I'm opening, I'm coming in.
Well, she had opened it. She had opened it by that time. So that's very interesting because we have, I'm loud, you know, just by nature. Anyway, that's interesting. And I found that story, you know, fascinating about you guys being in China to adopt Knox and then going to that buffet and then black bear being a delicacy. You go all the way to China.
Black bear with honey.
And you eat onion rings and chicken nuggets when you can eat something like black bear with
you
honey.
You would have tried it?
I would have tried it. Absolutely.
Even Robin, he got these little shrimp that he thought were like langoustines.
Yeah.
And he started probing into them. He goes, I think it's a beetle.
Oh, now that I wouldn't
yeah.
try.
But they had, like, they'd have the fish with the eyeballs and just the fish right out of the water laying there. And then one time we went to a restaurant and they had these beautiful aquariums. I'm like, oh, look at all the beautiful fish. Well, you know what people do? They come in, they're like, I want that sucker. And they eat the ones in the aquarium, kind of like
out.
Red Lobster with the little lobsters crawling around. I was like, oh, I can't look at them because I'll know they're not going to, you know, live. But yeah, it was really shocking. They'd
take food far too seriously.
I do. They would have a duck laying there with the whole duck, like with the bill, and that's why I was getting green. I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, that's different. That's really.
But the onion rings were really good.
Guess
they
so.
Were
after
really
thousands
good.
Of miles and number of who know how many hours traveling. But anyway, maybe we get a chance later on the program. I want to hear a little bit more about your trip to China. So
I'd love to.
Anyway, we're going to move on. We want to welcome to the program Dr. Rusty Reno, who's editor of First Things Magazine. By the way, folks, that is a great magazine, and I want to tell you that First Things is the only thing I pay for on the internet. I have a subscription to First Things and have for the last couple of years. It is such a good magazine. He's also author of the book we're going to discuss with him, Resurrecting the Idea of a Christian Society. Rusty, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you. And it's good to know, Ed, that you're a reader. Fantastic.
Yes.
He is a voracious reader. I mean, I've got 40 books beside my bed collecting dust, and I guess I think they make me feel like I'm scholarly.
Have,
he reads them.
All. I have 80 books beside my bed collecting dust.
No, you are amazing. You and my dad, y'all can just whip through books. And
I love
like
reading.
You'll go on page 36, this happened. I'm like, wow.
Well, I mean, if you're reading First Things, that's great. That's,
yeah.
It's not for everybody. It's kind of a demanding read, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's I like the writers because they, for the most part, deal with issues that I'm very interested in, culture, the intersection of culture and Christianity. But they're such great thinkers. Now, I don't pretend to be able to understand everything, but most of it is very accessible and just so well-reasoned. So kudos to you guys on a great magazine. I highly recommend it. And like I said, it's the only thing I pay for. If I had enough money, there might be a couple other things I might pay for online, but First Things is the only one I do.
And how can people get that? Can you tell them real quickly?
Well, Rusty, you tell folks how they can...
Firstthings.com.
Firstthings.com. Okay. They have a, you know...
Visit us. We try to make it easy for people to subscribe.
Yes. And I get the online, but you have a hard copy magazine as well, right? You still have
that? Yeah, that's actually quite popular. I mean, it's interesting that people still want to hold the things that they really care about, they really want to hold in their hands.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking my 86-year-old dad.
The magazine is
that.
A monthly magazine, and we have a nice, strong subscriber base, lots of thoughtful people in our country who really do care about having a voice in public life that's informed by their faith.
Well, let me ask you this now. This book, Resurrecting the Idea of a Christian Society, it's over, though, isn't it, Rusty? I mean, there's no way we can beat back the rising tide of secularism. They control almost all the levers of power. They control, you know, academia. They control. I mean, it's over, isn't it? I mean, how in the world are we gonna resurrect the idea of a Christian society?
That's a great question. It's interesting. I was just tapping away on my computer on exactly that topic because, you know, when people engage me and talk to me about the book, that is always the question that they ask. You know, come on, is this really realistic? So I've had to think a lot about that. And
well, people feel like that, though. They feel like there's no going back, and it's discouraging.
Discount to how, I mean, the current is going against us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we feel it. We feel we're being pushed to the side. I mean, we're in the way of what a lot of powerful people want. You know, we're in the way of abortion on demand. We're in the way of seemingly endless sexual liberation. We're in the way of doctor-assisted suicide. We're in the way of drug legalization. You know, we're in the way of a kind of dream world where male and female are just social constructions that we can remake and make over and over again according to our own personal needs. So we're in the way of a lot of things that a lot of powerful people, secular people want. And so we're feeling the pressure to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely the case. And so all of your listeners, I think, you know, resonate to that, you know, those observations. What we often lose sight of is how troubled the world that's dominated by secular progressives has become.
Hmm.
You mentioned academia. This is not a happy place right now, whether it's student protests at elite schools or whether it's the crisis of the humanities, you know, across academia. These are not really institutions that are thriving. They got tons of money, but there's a lot of unhappiness. We've got young women that are worried about sexual assault. So I think that we look there and think, huh, well, wait a minute. These institutions, probably the one sector of our society that's most dominated by kind of a post-Christian elite is education. And it's precisely that area that is increasingly troubled. Public
mm-hmm.
schools,
mm-hmm.
you know, they have really declined, citizens trust public education less and less with each passing year. So there's signs out there that the cultural regime that we feel is so powerful, and of course it is powerful, is also quite fragile. So I think we need to be sober-minded in both directions, sober about how serious threats are to religious liberty, for example, but also a sober assessment of how fragile our adversaries are. I mean, another example, you know, nobody is, Christianity is not at the root of an increasingly troubled relation between blacks and whites in America, or the shooting of policemen in Dallas or in Baton Rouge, or it's not the undue influence of Christianity in the South Side of Chicago that's led to this dramatic rise in shootings. So again, we don't look at our society and say, it must be this influence of Christianity that's driving all of these social dysfunctions. Instead, we look, it's actually where Christianity has receded that we see the greatest trouble, the greatest dysfunction.
Well, Rusty, while you're saying that, what I'm thinking...
Does that make sense? You know, we need to sort of realize maybe our fellow citizens are going to wake up and say, wait a minute, we don't want these people ruling us. What do those Christians have to say?
Well, so what do we do about the election? I mean, we've got an election coming up, and we're having these conversations probably every single one of us at home, at work, at church. over and over, battling on Facebook, battling on Twitter. My husband's glad on Twitter he has like a alias handle because he can just go off and nobody knows it's him. But, you know, they're going, we have these two presidential candidates kind of back to before. People are like, I can't vote for a Muslim or a Mormon. Now we're at a place where I can't vote for either one, but we have to be engaged. But people still want to say, but I'm a Christian. What do I do as a Christian? And, you know, I think we're encouraging people to look at the choices they're going to make as far as Supreme Court justices and things like that. But people are really thrown right now. They don't know what to do. They feel kind of lost. Should they engage? Should they not engage? I mean, could you address that? Because that's the biggest thing that's happening right now in our country. What do we as Christians do? Trump, Hillary, Trump, Hillary. What do we do? And I'm not saying that you can lead people to vote a certain way, but people are thrown and they're perplexed, and they are deciding sometimes, which is so frustrating to me, to stay home, to not engage. The opposite of what you're talking about.
Well, the first thing to observe is that it's not just Christians who are very unhappy with these two choices, but a wide spectrum of society.
That's true, right.
So I'm back to my point again, which is that, you know, doesn't it tell us something that we have this divisive electoral season that pits one very unpopular politician against another very unpopular recent politician?
Right.
And it would suggest that our society is not in good shape. And this is exactly in the time when Christianity has been being driven from public life. So I think your listeners need to think about the reparative role that faith can play in our society. I mean, the example I give are the relatives of the folks killed in the Charleston church basement by Dylann Roof. That, you know, their words of forgiveness, such a powerful gesture of repair of our social fabric. And that's not a little thing. That's a very big thing. And so, you know, everybody's got to make up their own mind about these two candidates, and I see pros and cons in all kinds of different directions. Well, I see a lot of cons. but I think what we have to contribute to the future of our nation transcends our vote in November. It really has to do with what we're doing in our local communities to rebuild the fabric of our society. Because right now we're coming apart, we're at odds with each other, and it's a repair of the fabric of the nation that I think is just so much needed right now.
Our guest is Dr. Rusty Reno. If you're a reader of First Things magazine, of which he is the editor, you'll be familiar with his name as R.R. Reno. He is author of the book Resurrecting the Idea of a Christian Society. We're talking to Rusty about that today here on Today's Issues. Rusty, let me ask you this. I've been reading in the book of Luke this week, just my own personal devotions, and was reading about John the Baptist. And Luke includes some exchanges he has with some of the people who are standing around listening to him. And one of the things that John the Baptist says, because people say, well, what shall we do? And, you know, they want to know, what is it, this call to repentance? How do we change our lives? And one of the things he says is, let the man with two tunics give one to the man who has none, and do the same with your food. I was kind of struck by that. I've read through that passage many times. And at the end of that little section, it says, with these and many other exhortations, he was preaching the gospel to the people. So the gospel calls for repentance, but it also gives us things to do. And one of those things, and you deal with this in your book, dealing with the poor. Talking about the divide in our country, there's a divide within the Christian community. We have what I call the John 3:16 wing and then the Luke 4:18 wing. One side says only preach the gospel to get people saved. The other side says we should be emphasizing taking care of the poor. Help us walk through a little bit that divide within Christianity and what a full-throated Christianity looks like.
Right. I mean, obviously it involves both of those dimensions. But I guess I put you know, John 3:16 in the first place at the front, so to speak. And here's why. I think most of us, the big impediment to our ability to reach out to our neighbor is fear. We're fearful, of folks who are a stranger. We're not sure we can really trust them. Or we're fearful that we don't have enough resources, and we're fearful about making sacrifices and giving things up. So ultimately, we need to be free from our fears about worldly powers. And that really requires being anchored on the rock of Christ in order to trust in God and God's providence to give us the freedom to take some risks, which is always what it was involved when you reach out to folks who are vulnerable and in need. Always has an element of risk involved in it. And so that strikes me as a kind of key element of a Christian society is a sense of confidence in some higher loyalty than yourself that gives you a kind of freedom. And it can be patriotism. It doesn't have to be a supernatural faith in God. It could be a kind of moral conviction that there's just something trustworthy that you anchor your life in, and then that gives you the freedom to meet others and their need. So that's what I try to develop in the book, as kind of seek higher things. We need a society that encourages us to seek something higher than ourselves. Because if we're in bondage to ourselves, wow, we just don't have much room to move.
Well, and something you've made me realize is that we get so discouraged.
Is a slave to a very petty tyrant.
We get discouraged with ourselves, with society, with what's going on. I think we do feel helpless versus doing what you're challenging us to do, is to go, we do have so much power in the Word of God and in Jesus, you know, for our individual lives. Instead of just saying, everything's a wash, to go, you know, I can only control so much outside of myself, but to go, you know, God has given me, you know, strength, and he's given me all this wisdom, and he's got a desire for my life. I can't control Ed, but I can control how I am towards Ed. And so I think that we've lost sight of that, Rusty, of seeing that our individual lives and that passion we have for Christ, there's power in that, and that we shouldn't be defeated. And, you know, and I think if we can see that and pull ourselves up from our bootstraps and live that way, it will make a difference. But I don't know that people are living that way because they are defeated. They're giving the enemy too much power.
Yeah, I mean, Lauren, I think you're absolutely right. You know, so many folks, we see this election cycle, that people feel very vulnerable, and they're feeling like they're getting battered around by very powerful economic forces that are transforming our country. They feel like they're getting battered around by political correctness. And so if a Christian who stands strong, I mean, I've got a young friend who teaches at a big state university who, you know, speaks publicly about the truth about marriage. And of course, this brings him a world of hurt. You know, social media harpies attack him. Some other faculty have brought administrative action to try to get him fired. But his ability to stand strong, which is based in his faith, his ability to stand strong, actually, he's a very popular teacher, even among students who disagree with him, because they see in him a kind of freedom from the powers that want to intimidate. And they themselves want to be strong like that. They want to have the courage of their conviction. And so I think you're right. I do think that we should not underestimate how powerful that witness can be. It's not a direct witness to Christ, but it's a witness to the strength that Christ can give us. And that's very much needed right in our time. Mm-hmm. You know, for all our talk of freedom, we don't have a whole lot of it. As people are slaves to all kinds of worldly powers. As I say in my book, we have a kind of a paganism that revolves around the gods of health, wealth, and pleasure. And, you know, they can be pretty demanding gods that really require us to pay obeisance to them. And to get free from those gods really requires a higher power, the true God, the living God.
Rusty, let me. We're coming down towards the end of our segment with you. You're talking about freedom. I know you're talking in terms of a spiritual freedom that many Americans have forfeited because of their pursuit of pleasure, for example. But talk a little bit about limited government. You have a chapter in your book there about the fact that we need to limit government to fend off tyranny. It doesn't always happen. You talk about some examples, even in our own history, of when even the Bill of Rights did not succeed in fending off government overreach. But it seems like, I think the perception is for a lot of people, things are getting worse, and the government is moving into every nook and cranny of our lives and controlling us. And in a political sense, we seem to be losing freedom as well.
Right. And my Constitution accords us all kinds of protections, but they are only as strong as the underlying culture. And as I describe in my book, there are two great powers that limit government, one from below, and that's marriage and the family, and one from above, and that's faith and religious communities. And, you know, mom and dad know how to run the household. They don't want Uncle Sam in there to tell them how to. And for that matter, mom and dad don't want the New York Times to dominate, you know, to run the household either. And so it's really a strong culture of marriage that leads people to say, no, homeschooling is perhaps the most powerful expression of limiting government. It's just basically saying to the government, no, you can't have my children. And so that's a very powerful, and I think the decline of marriage in our society is directly correlated with the growth of government. There's no question in my mind about that. So we need to restore a culture of marriage if we want to limit government. And then from above, really strong religious communities. At some point, religious folks say, no, I'm not going to do that. We see this in various religious liberties cases. Little Sisters of the Poor, the government said you have to provide this, that, and the other thing in the way of free contraception. And the Little Sisters of the Poor said no. Or the pharmacist who says, no, I'm not going to provide abortion-inducing drugs. Or the doctor who says, no, I'm not going to refer women for abortions and things like that. So that ability to say no, it provides, it's that pushback. Government always needs to be pushed back. And the question is, what are the sources of pushback in our society? And I see the pushback coming from family and faith. Family limits, that's a powerful loyalty, limits from below and faith, an even more powerful loyalty, limits from above. We need strong culture of faith, strong culture of family in order to limit government in the United States. Otherwise, our constitutional protections will just be slowly eroded away.
Our guest has been R.R. Reno. His name is Rusty. He's editor of First Things Magazine. He's author of the book, very fine book, folks, get a copy of it. It's titled Resurrecting the Idea of a Christian Society. Rusty, thanks so much for being our guest, and thanks for all the good work you guys do.
Well, thanks for having me on your show.
All right.
We needed to hear that.
We needed to hear, because it's an excellent analysis of what is breaking down in our society and where we need to go. So pick up a copy, folks, Resurrecting the Idea of a Christian Society. R.R. Reno, Rusty Reno, has been our guest. When we come back, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. When we come back, John Lott, who's an economist and political commentator, he's a staunch defender of the Second Amendment, is going to be talking about people arming themselves against gun control lies. We're going to talk to John Lott about that. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman today, along with Lauren Stewart, my co-host. This is Today's Issues. You're listening to the American Family Radio Network. We're going to take a 5-minute break, and then we'll be back. Make sure you join us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.